Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
I've just come back from a weekend in Tucson, meeting with the other three senseis in our line, and also visiting the Sangha of Tenny Nathanson, who lives there, one of the four of us. And so we had a lot of conversation over the weekend about our way. How do we walk it, and how do we describe it, and then there was this experience of, you know, visiting another sangha, and meanwhile I've been spending time, as some of you have, with our Heart Sutra, and as you saw, I'm continuing to bring in each time a different translation for us to. Be astounded by. And I'd like to, this evening, start at the beginning of the Heart Sutra, and maybe, hopefully, light up a little bit a connection between this sutra and koan inquiry. Why do we talk about the koan way? What's with that? What's the deal? And as one expression of a way, and then I'd like to bring the conversation to one particular koan. And part of the reason is that I think that the Heart Sutra itself has an intimate and natural connection with the koan way. And I want to kind of highlight that a little bit. Or the koan way has an intimate connection with the Heart Sutra, or something like that. So the koan I'm going to bring in, I'll speak right up at the front, goes like this. Someone asked, what is the pure, untouched sangha? Jiaozhou said, a young virgin. What are the people in the sangha? The virgin is pregnant. So that's the koan we're gonna play with along the way. So one of the things that some of us have been doing is dipping into several translations of this Heart Sutra, of which there are many. And so the Heart Sutra, which starts from a practice of deep absorption, yeah? The first line in the sutra, as we usually read it, is Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva, practicing deep prajna paramita, a practice of deep wisdom beyond wisdom, tonight's translation says, or deep absorption, deep seeing, and the tonight we said, where did it go? Moving in the course of, which gives you a different visceral sense, doesn't it? Moving in the course of. And so I wanted to read a couple of different translations. Because I think this beginning of our sutra is already an invitation to try something. It's saying, Avalokiteshvara, one dedicated to the compassionate practice of freeing everyone. in this practice, found something, saw something so important that it liberated him and maybe all of us with him from our translation says transforming all suffering and distress. What's that? What's that? So backing up, the Konzei translation, which is very much like, in this beginning part, like the one that we read tonight, says, Avalokiteshvara was moving in the deep course of the wisdom which has gone beyond. Was moving in the deep course of the wisdom which has gone beyond. Another translation says, starts with the Buddha, actually, but the Buddha entered the samadhi, so the deep and large stillness that expresses the Dharma called profound illumination. And at the same time, Avalokiteshvara, while practicing this way, saw in this way, he saw the five skandhas to be empty of nature. So while practicing, saw this way. And then in another one, Shariputra asks, how should a person train who wishes to practice in this way? And Avalokiteshvara says, see in this way. And another translation says, Avalokiteshvara illuminated the five skandhas, the five heaps, the five divisions, the five separate streams, the five categories we place on our experience. And saw that they are all empty, and he crossed beyond all suffering. Another one says, whenever Avalokiteshvara practices deeply, so If we can you feel how we have to put ourselves in that? What are you going to do except put yourself in that place of Avalokiteshvara, right? Whenever you, as the embodiment of the vow to wake all beings, whenever you, as the embodiment of that movement of heart and mind, practice in this way, so whenever Avalokiteshvara practices deeply in this way, she intuitively perceives. That's interesting, isn't it? She intuitively perceives that the five aggregates, these five categories, five ways we clump things, are of blank essence. And then one more. Says Avalokiteshvara, was looking perfectly at the practice of the profound perfection of wisdom. That seems kind of like redundant. It was perfectly looking at perfection. There's a lot of perfection in there. The profound perfection of wisdom, perfectly looking at the emptiness of inherent existence. So we have... we have wisdom that's gone beyond, profound illumination. See in this way, illuminated the five skandhas, intuitively perceives, was looking perfectly at the practice of profound perfection of wisdom. So the reason I bring all these in is because I hope that you can, that I hope that you'll feel it in some ways as I do, that we're starting from a practice of a kind of concentration of light, you know, a kind of concentration of the light that comes through us, the light of our own being, which is the light that comes through us. We are a concentration of light, we could say. Maybe that's what we are. And if we practice the concentration of light that we are, as the experience of moving in the course of a deep wisdom, a deeper wisdom than our ordinary, how we define wisdom, which is just a category again. What if, though, we intuitively already know this moving in the course of a deeper seeing, in the course of just being the concentrated light, of looking deeply? What if it's not something added, you know, that we have to figure out somehow, but something that we can release in ourselves? We're invited to try it out. Try seeing like this. Try being a concentrated light that's directed towards just this. Just this. Just this right now. Just this. Whatever it comes before you. Whatever comes to meet you. Meet it as a concentrated light of just seeing. Before anything else happens, just that moment. Just that moment of meeting. What about that? And it's not static. Isn't that lovely? Moving in the course of. What if we just try it? Moving in the course of just being a concentrated light of awareness. We can try that. Why not? What have you got to lose but your chains? We're invited to try it out. What might that be like? Okay, so what if the koan way actually is like this? So how might we, so what's the nuts and, what are some sort of suggested nuts and bolts of this? How might we actually do this? Suppose we're talking about in our meditation. So practically speaking, we sit down, yeah? We sit down erect and still and comfortably with the intention to practice in a way that will liberate all of us. Yeah, that will release the freedom in all of us. On the ground of that intention, we establish a steady spaciousness. We are willing to release everything that's it's almost like sort of snipping all the little lines that are holding us and just establish a spaciousness. And it can be done in a very visceral way by just, I noticed it this morning sitting in Tucson in a beautiful garden in the rain, feeling consciously as I was breathing, feeling my awareness go down, down, down without any limit, letting myself open to down, 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 without any limit. Letting myself open to up, 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 without any limit. And likewise to in front of me, to the sides, to the back. Just opening awareness without any limit. And then having a certain ease with that, to drop a question into it. What's this? What is? That may be a particular this, or it may be just a just what's this, and see what this appears. Yeah. What is this? And here it might be, what is the prajnaparamita? What is empty? What's the empty of this? Do I notice any empty of this? Do I notice a fullness of this? Do I notice a boundlessness of this? To just drop a question in and then let it inhabit that spaciousness that we have cleared. To me, this is allowing ourselves the most primal kind of play. Nothing to accomplish. There's nothing to accomplish. But we're actually allowed to just wonder. To just wonder freely. With nothing to prove. And then let that go again. Just be. Not trying. So it's worth noting that we're not trying to find an answer. We're not trying to answer that question, what's this? We get to ask it. We get to be the asker and see what happens. So it's, in a way, it's establishing a kind of relationship with what arises. And that relationship can be more and more friendly and uninhibited. And welcoming of whatever arises in our own hearts and seems to arise in front of us. We might be, you know, we don't know what we might be, you know? Something, we might have a flash of anger or fear or sadness or delight or who knows what arises. But holding an open field to it. There's a kind of intimacy in that. And to stay interested in what happens when we notice, I don't like this, you know, or I'm doing it wrong, you know, any of those things that come up. Or this is awfully uncomfortable and I think I need a drink, you know. All those things that come up. To stay interested and just notice. And then to sometimes reach back just a little bit and notice what came right before that thing that arose. To just kind of sort of probe, sort of like probing, you know, when you were a kid and you used to sort of probe the loop, the place where the tooth was, you know. Just kind of, what was that?
When you're growing up, too.
Yeah. The place where the tooth was. Yeah. 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 And so this way, one thing we're doing is feeling for and discovering a through line. Discovering a different kind of continuity. That we're not establishing by a sequence of thoughts. We tend to establish continuity by, I thought this, and then I thought this, and then I thought this, and then I thought this. And then I felt that, and then I was that, you know? But if we, when we hold this spaciousness this way, we might notice that there's a continuity that's more basic than that. What's that? You can feel for it. And we can become then more and more available to the big world of ourselves, which is as big as everything, that excludes nothing. So how is the Heart Sutra an expression of something like this? So listen to a bit again of the flow of it, of the way we usually say it. Practicing deep prajnaparamita sees, clearly sees. Clearly she sees that all the five heaps are empty. All the five heaps are heapless. And that this thing right here, you know, this itch, for example, is exactly this largeness, this largesse of the moment. This itch contains the whole largesse of this moment. And the whole largesse of this moment can be felt exactly in this itch. This heartache, this, say perhaps you're missing someone, this missing someone, contains the entire largesse of this moment, of everything that is and everything that is around what is and everything that goes through what is. And the whole universe is contained in this particular heartache also. There's no beginning of it, there's no end of it. There's nothing wrong with it, there's nothing right with it. There's no holding on to it, and there's no letting go of it or losing it. I wonder, is that so? Is that my experience? Is it like that? Might it be like that? That's what I mean by this way of inquiry. Notice, huh, what is it really like for me? Is it like this? What if I see it this way? What's that like? What if I let the light of my awareness shine into this possibility? What is that like? So, now I'm going to make a bit of a leap. Do I want to do that or just stop? Do you guys just feel like this
leap
is enough? You want to go leap? Okay. Okay, so the leap to the con. This particular koan. Yeah? So I'll say the koan again. Someone asked, what is the pure untouched Sangha? Jiaozhou said, a young virgin. What are the people in the Sangha? The virgin is pregnant. Okay. So, a young virgin. What is the pure, untouched Sangha? The boundlessness of Sangha, the emptiness of Sangha. What is the moment before we say Sangha? What is Sangha in the moment before we say Sangha? What is the unspokenness of Sangha? Yeah? Untouched. There's something untouched there, something young, something that hasn't quite yet become. Yeah? And isn't this something true of Sangha? We give it a name, Sangha, and yet it isn't anything. Right? There isn't any such thing as Sangha, really? You know, a word, yet? And right now, Sangha is full of the possibility of everything. It can be anything. It can come forth as anything. It's completely untouched yet. Nothing has yet happened at this moment. Yeah? And yet there it is, Sangha. Yeah. How amazing is that? Yeah? All, it's all possibility. And this is true at every moment. There is maybe this possibility, Sangha. I feel a tremendous kind of young and unformed power in that. There's like potential energy, right? The energy of something that hasn't happened yet. Right there. So then, what about the people, yeah? What are the people in the Sangha? Oh, the people in the Sangha. Oh yeah, you, and you, and you, and you, and me. Yeah? So, the virgin is pregnant. Yeah, so you're still at that moment where maybe something hasn't happened, but you're in gestational time. Something is cooking. Yeah? And in the putting together of all of us, it's cooking. Something is happening. And something hasn't happened yet. All the time. And there's nothing pure about it. Here we are. It's impossible, right, the pregnant virgin, and here is the impossible pregnant virgin of us, yeah, full of everything that we are and everything that might be, and nothing pure about it, fortunately, because something gets to happen, because out of, in that purity, nothing's happening, yeah, fortunately, something can be born here. And so I wonder about that. And so in my koan practice, I can carry this koan and wonder about it. What is the virginal sangha for me? What is the sangha that isn't quite yet? What is that? There is no sangha. What about that? What's the largeness of it? What's the emptiness of it? And then what's the concrete reality of it? Where am I in that? How am I Sangha? How is Sangha me? What are we doing? What do we bring forth? How are we going to meet what has come to meet us in Colorado Springs, in America, in the world, in our life? What comes and bangs on our door? What is that? Yeah. So that's where I'll stop. I hope you were leaping with me. A bit of a leap. Did you feel it?
So I have the sense that in the not yet happened, it's already happened.
Uh-huh. There's nothing incomplete. Lovely. Do you want to say more about that?
I don't know if I can.
Okay. But it's the sense that you have.
Which doesn't mean non-action.
Right.
Or action, but that it's already.
Because if that is complete, it excludes nothing, including what hasn't happened yet. There's that sense. Mm-hmm. It's already complete.
In a timeless sense.
Yeah.
Of now, later, before.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you. I feel that also. But I don't understand it.
I don't either.
Yeah.
I like the sense of intuition, because it's not conceptual. As soon as you conceptualize it, it ceases to be intuition.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Intuition is a very intimate not knowing and knowing at the same time.
Right.
No evidence, but knowing.
Right. A knowing that doesn't have anything to do with evidence.
Right.
Yeah. You know it in your bones. Yeah. And everywhere else. In your toes. And can we believe it? I mean, there's an act of faith involved in a way. Yeah. That, or faith, or commitment, allegiance, in a way.
I like what you're saying about Avalokiteshvara moving in the deep course of realization. Seems like not moving is perhaps form stasis.
Yeah.
And there's no, maybe say it poorly, no creativity in that.
Yeah.
Whereas in moving through, moving in, practicing that, there's movement.
Yeah.
And along with this, I think that's important that is that this isn't Manjushri talking about this. This is Avalokiteshvara or Guanyin, the Bodhisattva of compassion.
Who hears the cries of the world. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Manjushri, you know, the Bodhisattva of great wisdom with the sword that cuts through delusion. So this is not Manjushri.
So that suffering, being able to feel that form intimately, is a requirement.
Yeah. Being able to feel the form of suffering is a requirement, you're saying.
And moving with that.
And moving with it.
And so for depression is feeling that suffering and not moving.
Lovely. Because in moving with it, it gets large, doesn't it? You then feel the largeness of it. And somebody was talking about that downstairs. Was it you, Karen? That the suffering, when you feel the largeness of it at the same time that you fully experience the suffering, there's something transformative about that? That's what I thought you were saying. Well, and all that is not suffering as well at the same time. But that moving, Frank, yeah, thank you.
And this also comes up in our koans. So for example, walking a straight path through our crooked mountains.
Walking straight on a
mountain
path in 99 turns, yeah.
And
so there's the you're talking about that's the sense of moving with?
Yeah. And not being locked down into that you're on that crooked path, that you're locked down into the burden of suffering. But there is a straight path through it.
Right.
And that straight path can be, you know, straight is often thought of as easy, as you know it's not sometimes.
Right. There's that other meaning of straight. Straight is the gate, means narrow, actually. Which is kind of interesting, too.
But not holding on to the suffering too tight, not holding on to that emptiness too tight, or too loosely, whatever. But there is that straight, call it middle path, if you would, between...
Well, there's just only straight, wherever you are, right?
Yeah.
Well, I had an experience the very first time I came here. And I'm just now, within the past couple weeks, remembering it. I wasn't familiar with the building. I wasn't familiar with, really, any of you, any of this at all. And I walked in the back door, didn't know where to go for the 5:15 discussion group. I walked kind of down this side that we walked down, and I turned and I came in this room, and I walked kind of about where you're sitting. And there was this feeling of, I can't even, there's no real words, an intuition. And this is a really, I was drawn to this place. I was, the energy pulled me to right here. And there was physically nothing here that I could see, but there was something here. So it was that very much like, to me there's a connection with the koan. It was, you know, this emptiness, this full of potential, but something really is here.
Yeah.
And so there was this empty form that I don't see anything, but I know something.
Yeah. And you knew it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
No doubt about it.
Mm-hmm.
There's something real about it.
Yeah.
And so we...
It's universal. It's not just unique to Zen per se.
Percy, is anything from this sort of striking a chord with what you were reading during the week? Anything light up for you there?
I feel like I'm at a resting place, you know, and an epiphany at the same time. Because I found one page in that book, two paragraphs that I've been going over in my mind listening to this, and it's like, that's the answer. Everything everybody's been saying, it's short, those two paragraphs. So, you know, in a way I'm kind of anxious to get back to those two paragraphs because I'm afraid that I don't remember everything about them, everything that was said in them. And at the same time, I'm wondering when I'll start on that path, on that trek, on that climb, as to why I come here, you know, what draws me to these conundrums, to these puzzles in the koan, you know.
But there's something in you that trusts it.
Yeah, but like I said, right now, it's kind of resting, it's kind of taking the struggle that everybody else is involved in, you know, and I'm listening because I have answers right there, that's okay, that's the whole thing. But at the same time, you know, I know that it's kind of a delusion. I know that, you know, there's something more to it than that. But right now, I'm on that ledge, on that. I've discovered that, and it's, oh, wow, you know? And so I'm just kind of relaxing here.
Lovely, you know? Lovely. That's so interesting what you say. When you say it's kind of a delusion, it that actually has to do with that feeling of motion, right? It's like, right now, this, I'm resting, and there will be motion, you know?
Yeah, because so, I didn't understand. Well, you know, I had this compulsion to come and to work with the practices, the meditation, and lately the koans, but I just didn't understand, you know, the koan. You imagine, if you just look at it, it's like the trickster thing again. I mean, just that one koan, you know, could you repeat it again?
The one about what's the pure untouched sangha?
Yeah, the pure untouched sangha. And I can see, I can hear Groucho Marx coming out with it. It's the Virgin, yeah. And what about all these people? Just pregnant. Yeah. I mean, you know.
Yeah, I love that Groucho Marx image. Totally.
Rascal. Groucho Marx.
Rascal Marx, yeah.
So it's so simple. And yet, we're sitting here going through it over in our mind because there's something. And that thing for me right at the moment is in those two paragraphs.
Do you want to read them? Do you know where they are?
Yeah, I can read them because I just...
Do we have time?
We have about 6 minutes before we need to...
Okay. Well, we'll let Joan's voice come through, Percy, and close the evening. Or Percy's voice come through Joan. Maybe that's
Europe in the mid-17th century was a turbulent place, just coming out of the 30 Years' War, an age of almost constant warfare, religious persecutions, famine, and the surging tides of refugees fleeing them. Given the typical lifespan at the time, most people had never known anything else. When the war finally ended and people shrugged and sighed and went home again, an artist in the Netherlands named Jan Vermeer was painting seemingly simple scenes of domestic life. A woman working in a kitchen, bathed in the light, streaming through an open window. A doorway, and beyond it, two people talking quietly together. A city, glittering with rain, the storm clouds just parting above. A young woman with a pearl earring, turning for a moment toward the viewer. In these luminous portraits of people in the midst of their lives, it's as though Vermeer were saying to his viewers, this is peace. What you are feeling right now looking at this, that's what peace feels like. He's not describing peace or even portraying it. He's trying to invoke it into a world that hadn't known it for a very long time. And not just invoke it in the world in general, but in the specific and individual heart of each viewer. He seems to be asking his viewers to experience for themselves what it might be like to live a peaceful life, and then to take up the question of how they, together, we make a peaceful world.